Hi, my name is Slinky. Thank you for listening to Chew My Mom. I never listen.
What a treat we have for you today on Nothing But Net. We have the producer, Megan Harrington, from Play Like a Girl, The House That Rob Built. And Rob is Robin Selvig, the longtime successful basketball coach at the University of Montana. I'm so grateful that both of you could share some time with us. This is going to be a walk back in time and a move forward based on the movie and the documentary that you guys have put together. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks, Debbie.
Hey, let's start with you, Coach. You've been around the game a long time. And when you announced your retirement in the game, for as successful as you have been with the number of victories, conference championships, and NCAA tournament appearances, it seems to me that your greatest legacy is through the people that you coached. Tell us a little bit about your journey and what has led you to this moment right here on our podcast. So break it down for us a little bit, Coach, like you would a scouting report.
Well, I was fortunate looking back to get in just at the time things were getting started, and you didn't know where women's basketball, women's sports was going to go. And looking back, it was a great time. Some real Pat, and I can think of all the ones that were Kayao, that were back from that time, and things were just getting going. And I don't think any of us realized where it was going to go. We had some fee waivers when we started, and we didn't have scholarships. And what I found was that once young women were given the opportunity, finally, they took full advantage of it. And we just saw the game grow year after year. It did at our place, in our program, and we're thankful for the support we got from the university and the community. And one thing that started to happen was, people will enjoy watching women play basketball. They were pretty skeptical to start with. I came back to my alma mater and fortunately took this job with a little bit of apprehension, not knowing where it was going. And pretty much right away it started to take off, and fans started to go, oh, these guys are pretty good. And to watch its growth and where it is now and what's happened in the last year or two, to finally see packed gyms and all the things that go with it, and the young women getting the respect they deserved as athletes. I just feel fortunate to have got in on the ground floor, seen a lot of the real pioneers in women's basketball over the years, and to see where the game has grown to.
So then we fast forward to all the many years of success and your announcement of retirement. And then here comes this Megan Harrington from where? And she's going to produce something. And you're going, what? Megan, tell me how you end up in this picture.
Well, I was one of those fans that went to Lady Grizz games as a little girl. That was my dream always growing up. Fourth grade, wrote a poem. That was what I dialed in on. I didn't know other places didn't have 9,000 people showing up at games. So I was really fortunate to have these role models to look up to. Jean McNulty, who helped with arrange this interview, one of the ones I looked up to. It was just amazing to see these women in the community. So I was fortunate to play for Rob, got a scholarship. He announced his retirement. We had been thinking about a documentary, and I knew what the program had done for me personally. I knew the friendships, the community, the family, Rob as a mentor and someone who, really, I think, shaped and molded a lot of us and helped us in our journey after basketball, because that's really what it was about. It was great to be a basketball player, but he was setting us up to be players in life. So talked to Rob. I called him shortly after he retired, like really shortly after he retired, and said, hey, we want to do this doc. And he's like, let me think about it. And I would think it was a Tuesday. And I said, okay, I'll call you Friday. And he's like, Meg, it's 3 days. And I was like, all right, I'm going to pump the brakes. He's been through a lot of things, and I'll give him some time. And fortunately, with the help of his wife, Jane, I think he agreed to do it, because it's just not something that's in his wheelhouse to have the spotlight on him.
Megan, through your eyes, and I'm guessing since you grew up a Lady Grizz fan, that you attended camps and clinics, you went to every game, and then here you find yourself a player in high school who wants to be good enough. Your story I'm guessing mirrors what mine was at NC State with Kay Yao. Why do you think this is, it is important for people to see the game through your eyes in this documentary?
Well, because I don't think I was good enough maybe in the eyes of many when I got a scholarship. I was late in the game getting one. I was fortunate that I did. And through the eyes of, like, nothing's impossible. Perseverance is key. Belief in yourself and others believing in you when appropriate. But first and foremost, you have to believe in what you can do. Yeah. You're not out to prove anything to anybody but yourself and help the team be better. So this is this underdog story. It's a champion story. It's a family story.
Coach, with all the success, all the championships, everything that you have done, all the awards that you have received, when you look back at the beginning, when you said there was some skepticism about taking the job, what was the hesitation back then? Because you wouldn't find that hesitation in today's game.
No, and you have to remember, it was just getting started. I mean, a lot of places fought adding women's sports to their programs. Title IX helped in that journey. But just me personally, I played at the University of Montana, so I knew a lot of people here, a lot of friends here. Women's basketball, you know, there's going to be 50 jump balls and all this stuff. And I was fortunate to, I coached 3 years of high school basketball near where I grew up, and it was all just new to them. And I think what I remember most about those young ladies I coached was how they really appreciated that I took it seriously and that I demanded they could get better and be good. And I didn't look at it any different coaching boys, coaching girls. And looking back at how they just relished having the opportunity, there was no questioning how I coached or you know, things like that. It was, oh, we have an opportunity. We can go play. And it just took off from there. And the people in Missoula, that I knew a lot of people, they said, oh, well, Robin's got the job. We'll go take a look. And they were pleasantly surprised in how rapidly these young ladies and were great athletes and competitive and all that, and how they just won over the hearts of the fans in Missoula. They were fun to watch.
Coach, describe your style of play so that we have a handle on what exactly all these 9,000 fans were going to see.
Well, I was fortunate to play for a great basketball coach at the University of Montana, Judd Heathcote.
And, oh, man. Well, of course. I mean, Tom Izzo still references him today, the time.
Yep. Nice long shot, Tom, in that last game, too, by the way.
Yes. That's where I last heard his name.
Yeah. And so I was fortunate to learn basketball from a great coach. And I give a lot of credit to him for whatever I did. But we really, in Montana, high school basketball back then was just starting, but it was really fortunate for me. We didn't have like a big recruiting budget or anything, but Montana produced some really good players for us. And it grew so fast. I think I took job in 78, and I think 82, we hosted an NCAA game. And I can still remember our athletic director helping the people pull the stands out because 4,000 people showed up. And nobody knew that was coming. And that was kind of the kickoff for our program in terms of fans and following. And, you know, over the years, I tried to, you know, we played some of the, we had a series with Pat, with Tennessee and things like that. And when they came back to our place, it was a full packed house and things like that. So I didn't really think about it till I retired and Megan talked me into doing this documentary. Of what the time was and what the growth was and what the battle was for so many fighting for locker rooms and uniforms and all those things. And I hope the young women today can look back because it's not that long ago and really appreciate the people that were there before them and what they did to get it to this stage.
Megan, I have been on the air for 37 years and I've played before that. I have been in every state playing or calling a game with the exception of 4 or 5. Montana is one of the states I have not been to. What is it about Montana and girls basketball? When I think of Montana, I think wide open ranges, 3, maybe 1 stoplight in a town where you've got to drive 5 hours to get to basketball practice. Tell me what it is about Montana. Explain it to us so we understand.
Well, you actually described it very well, of the hours it takes to get to different places, like a mall or for some kids. It is about 2 hours. Movie theater depends where you're from, on small towns, ranches, Native American reservations. But when you think about a community and you think, okay, there's 9,000 people at an interstate game, Montana versus Montana State, 9,000 people back in the day, and there's only 70, 60,000 people in the city of Missoula. There's something special happening. And there was this bond between the players and the fans. And when you came into Dahlberg Arena, you weren't just playing the Lady Grizz. You were playing the whole arena. And they were going to make it very difficult. There's just, you have to experience it to understand it. And it was something.
Coach, you mentioned Pat, and you're referencing Pat Summitt, and she's one of the many coaches that was crazy enough to go there, right? I mean, you had a hard time scheduling, if I recall right, from the rumors that I heard. Nobody wanted to go there and play. Everyone knew if they went there and played, you're going to have a hard time coming out of there with a loss. And your conference was considered a mid-major conference. So the big dogs going in there, that was a tough. How'd you sell Pat on coming to Montana?
Well, it's interesting. I was just visiting with her at the Final Four the year before, and she mentioned that Montana's one of the states they'd never been to, and I was talking, well, and we had to go there first, of course. When she came back that year, they were ranked number one, and they had a trip to Colorado and us. And Colorado had it going at the time, too. I think they got 7,000 or 8,000 fans. What at their game? So Pat had mentioned after she'd never played back-to-back games in front of 20,000 people or something. So she just was looking for, and I think Pat knew more than her players did, that we had a pretty good team. And we had given them a decent game at Tennessee, where they usually blew everybody out terribly. And then we lost down to the wire game here. So it was a big event for us and for our community to be able to bring the number one team in here. And actually had a chance. So that's how that kind of came about. I credit her. She didn't mind any challenges, obviously. And it was just her mentioning that that's a place she hadn't played in Montana. And it was great for our program in terms of building a fan base and everything else. You know, once people came and gave women's basketball a chance, fans did, they come back. It's the ones that never gave it a chance that are missing out on some really good basketball.
That's a really good segue to my next question for you, Coach, because, you know, there's the chicken and the egg conversation, right? It's the product versus the promotion. To me, the product has to be good before you can, you know, do the four P's: price, promotion, place, and product, right? If the product's not any good, the distribution of it, or whatever the ticket price is, or whenever you play it, or who you play, it may not matter if your product isn't good enough. Obviously, your product was good enough. And it was interesting and entertaining enough that it allowed your administration to get behind you. Is that how it worked, or was it the other way? The promotion came first.
Well, no, I think it's the way you just described it. I think if we were 5-20, things wouldn't have happened the way it happened. You have to have a good product. And that's where my blessings came in. I had some really good players. They grew up all around Montana mainly. We recruited outside the state too, but they lived and died to play basketball. Not a lot to do in eastern Montana in the winter, but get in the gym. It's cold, it's windy. And the other thing is, all these small towns we recruited people from, they support their kids. And once they added women's basketball, well, I grew up in a small 150 people Class C town. Everybody went to the boys' game. Everybody went to the girls' game. Mm-hmm. And so you were playing in back gyms back then in high school. So, but yeah, I think the promotion, some places kicking and fighting the growth, back in the AIW days, and then, NCAA came in and said, we're going to sponsor a tournament. But if you went to the AIW national tournament, which we did, you didn't get any money for it. You know, I almost think some places were hoping the women didn't do that, so they didn't have to come up with the money to send them. So I think when NCAA started getting their foot in the door, that really helped too. Not that there was, I think of a lot of great women that were battled for AIW and for women to grow on their own, kind of. But it really opened the door then to, because we played big name teams back in those days, and some of them didn't support. I remember Oklahoma dropping women's basketball.
Yeah, sure, I do too.
Yeah, it was like, whoa, what the heck? Right. And of course, they came back and they proved that Oklahoma, oh yeah, that you can draw and you can, and we actually were producing pretty good revenue, which a lot of places didn't think could happen. So, just a long journey, but also a journey that couldn't be stopped. I mean, women were going to take that opportunity and make the most of it, and they did.
We're talking with Robin Selvig, the former head coach and retired head coach at the University of Montana that has a resume too long to be able to share. And Megan Harrington, the producer of the documentary, that Play Like a Girl, The House That Rob Built. So Megan, take us a little bit into the documentary. What's it about? Where can we find it? What are some details about it?
Great. Okay. Just real quickly, Debbie, Rob went out to the community. He invited them to come watch games when it first started. So he promoted, and he's not giving himself enough credit there. His name meant something in the town, and he brought crowds. He worked really, really hard to make sure people came to watch the women play and that they had their own time. So he did a lot himself. The documentary can be seen on PBS right now, pbs.org. Really, it's a story of when a time when few believed that women were athletes and capable athletes. Robin Selvig takes over the reins at the University of Montana. Title IX is kind of just being implemented. And these women who didn't really have somebody believe in them necessarily or challenge them in the ways that they could be challenged are taken serious as athletes. And because of it, a community is formed around them. This sisterhood is formed over 38 years. It's something that we probably won't see again starting now with all the transfer portal. This community, this commitment, this we're in it together. This is a bond. This is a family. So if it's the kind of story, even if you don't like sports, it's really a story about life, what it means and what it takes and how to be part of something bigger than yourself.
And that's it right there. The what people will call entitlement. And I always say, I think giving is a skill that we need to learn. Why is it important now that this documentary is out there for people to consume?
I think it's a reminder that we need to be aware of what it took to get to where we are today. There are so many women, and Montana, this story is one story, but it represents all of the places around the country during that time period with coaches and players who were sacrificing, who were building, who were grinding it out for that next generation. And it's a responsibility of each generation to do that for the next, because there was a time when there weren't what it is now. You could watch basketball whenever you want. So we have to remember the past to appreciate the here and now and to prepare ourselves for the future.
I hear you, Megan, and I get what you're saying, and I agree with you. And Coach, I want you to tell people, why should we watch this? Why should we take the time to sit down and put our feet up and consume and enjoy this product?
Well, I'd say the film, you know, it's not so much about me. It's about the growth of women's sports. It really is. And it takes, it's not that many years ago. I have three sisters. One didn't get a chance to compete in athletics. One got 2 years and one got the four. I mean, it's just not that long ago when all this was happening. So I think for them to appreciate, and it didn't grow overnight. I mean, this thing has taken off a lot more for various reasons. But I think you can learn a lot from history and knowing the history, and you can learn to appreciate what you have and crazy what you didn't have. And it's just not that long ago. So I was always appreciative. One of the things I always say is how the young ladies I got to coach, both in high school for 3 years and college, how they relished the opportunity. And it was new. They just didn't have that opportunity before. And I always said, why would you not want the same opportunities for your daughters as your sons? You know, it makes no sense. And finally, that support came through, some kicking and struggling, like I said, some embracing. And the ones that embraced got ahead, and they embraced here. We had success, but they I think, realized our administration and our community what could be possible.
Coach, when you're sitting back watching games at your home and now, and you're seeing the product on the floor, you're seeing the great play, how talented and skilled how much resources behind the women's game now. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel great. You know, my former players, of which there are many and still live in this community, would whine that, you know, well, we didn't get new shoes every, all of those things that they, that don't mean that much, but it's what it should be now. I'm just amazed at the quality of, there's, look at this year, there's so many teams. I don't know how you could pick who's going to win this thing. And they're so good. And it's just grown. It's just grown and grown and grown. Like in Megan's playing time here, looking at how far it's come, Megan could have fit in and been great right now, by the way. But the level just keeps getting better all the time. Oh, yeah, no, I didn't let her shoot. But she can...
That's the problem.
We could have won some more games had I done that. Megan grew up across the street from me, by the way, and the phone call was a little late in the recruiting process when I finally said, and when I told her, this is Robin and I have a scholarship for you, she said, oh, really? Is this really Robin? And so it's kind of a funny story, but she...
That's all right, Megan. NC State didn't want me at first either.
She told me at the end of that phone call, I would never regret it, and I never did. So it was, you know, just a little personal side there, and Megan just did an amazing job. The whole crew did with that video. It was an amazing experience to witness putting together the documentary, how much work it took and how much went in. And it's a fabulous produced documentary.
Well, Megan, I want to thank you for taking your little girl experience and putting it on the big stage. And Coach, I want to thank you for bringing a small town USA basketball back in the day to helping us get the game to where it is today. And a special shout out, you already mentioned Gene McNulty King for putting us all together so that we could do this today. So I want to thank you both. I'm grateful. I appreciate how hard you've worked to put this story out there. And I hope we can help you get it to other people so that we can share it with others.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you for all you do for women's basketball, have done in your playing days. Now, I mean, you're a real champion, and it's an honor to be on screen with you.
We're all on the same team, pushing the rock up the hill. Sometimes the hill's steeper than others. Back in your day, Coach, it was really steep, and there's still an incline. But we're definitely moving in the right direction as long as we're all pulling together, and I think we are. And so I'm grateful for your time, and thank you very much for sharing your stories with us.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you.